welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Romance coming up in this hour with some musical stories. Later on, we hear singers Nelson Eddy and Jeanette MacDonald on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater. But right now, it's Grand Central Station, a broadcast heard on CBS on August 24th, 1946, with John Reed King narrating the story Moonblind.
Pillsbury Snow Sheen Cake Flour brings you Grand Central Station. The bullet seeks its target. Shining rails in every part of our great country are aimed at Grand Central Station, heart of the nation's greatest city. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night, great trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flash briefly over the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5 mile tunnel which burrows beneath the glitter and swank of Park Avenue, and then... Grand Central Station, crossroads of a million private lives, gigantic stage on which are played 1,000 dramas daily. A great poet once asked, "What is there in thee, moon, that thou shouldst move my heart so potently?" Young Johnny Clement knew the answer to that one, and knew it well, because he had learned it the hard way. As our story opens, Johnny is lying motionless in the emergency room of the police hospital not far from Grand Central Station. The nurse beside his bed is taking his pulse as she listens to his slow, tortured breathing. She looks up as the door opens.
Okay to come in now?
Yes. Good evening, Inspector. Come in.
Has he regained consciousness yet?
Yes, sir. About an hour ago.
Good. All right, if I talk to him for a little while, I promise not to tire him.
I'm all right, nurse. You don't have to worry about me.
There's your answer, Inspector. I'll leave you alone with him.
Thank you, nurse. I won't be long. Well, Clement, sure you feel like talking?
Yeah, let's get it over with. Ask your question.
I didn't come here to grill you, Johnny.
You didn't come here to bring me flowers, neither. Fire away.
Look, son. You're pretty well banged up. Why make this any more difficult than it is?
Okay. I'll make it easy for you. Just tell me what you want me to admit, and I'll admit it. Take whatever's coming to me.
I'm not asking you to admit anything. But I would like to hear your story of what happened. The whole story. From the very beginning.
Okay. If that's what you want, I'll try and give it to you. As you already know... I'm just a small-town kid. A hick with big city ideas. Yeah. I had a lot of big ideas. Like making $1 million, sitting in a fancy office, and stuff like that. I guess that part of it started after I met Ruth. When my father moved to River Junction to take a job in a foundry. You see, River Junction's just a dirty little hole of a town out in the country. It was always... kind of a mystery to me how a place like that could produce a girl as beautiful as Ruth. I know I wasn't good enough for her. Me, Johnny Clement, the kid in greasy overalls who worked at the filling station. But I sort of forgot about that when I met Ruth. I made up my mind I was going to have her, but that I wouldn't take her unless I could give her the best, the very best of everything. You know what I mean. Ruth didn't see things quite that way. She wanted us to get married right away, and nothing I said seemed to make any difference, even that last night when I was getting ready to go to New York.
But, darling, I don't care whether you wear overalls or a stiff white collar or how much money you have in the bank. I just love you, Johnny. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Oh, you know it does, Ruth. It means everything in the world to me. That's why my mind's made up.
No, Johnny.
Now, don't make it any harder for me, Ruth. I hear Give me a hand with this suitcase, will you? Now, press down on the top so I can lock it.
All right, Johnny.
Atta girl. There we are. Everything in the world that Johnny Clement owns, all neatly squeezed into one shiny new suitcase.
All except my heart, darling.
Oh, come on now, Ruth. Don't look so sad. You sound as if I'm about to fly to the moon instead of going 200 miles to the city.
I can't help it, Johnny.
Listen, baby. Give me 6 months in New York, or at most a year, and I'll be sending a brand new Cadillac back to River Junction for you. Now, that's nothing to wear a long face about, is it?
Please, please, Johnny, stay here with me, where you belong.
Oh, Ruth. Darling, maybe we never should have started this. You and I mean. Maybe we're just wrong for each other.
Don't say that, Johnny. I won't let you.
Maybe you should have married Harley when he asked you. With his job in the bank at Albany and that big house.
But I love you, Johnny.
Ruth, that's why I've got to make good in New York. Now, just give me a few months there. Maybe a year and I'll be able to buy and sell guys like Harley Wholesale in gross lots.
You frighten me when you talk like that.
Oh, Ruth. Well, getting there time for the train. Come on, baby. Walk a little way toward the station with me.
Johnny.
Hmm?
Johnny, look at the moon.
Yeah. Full one. Pretty, isn't it?
That's our moon, Johnny. Remember the night we met?
How could I ever forget it? There was a full moon that night, too. Just like this one.
And that night when you first told me you loved me, there was the gentle moon, the lamp of lovers, lighting all your words.
You should have been a poet, Ruth, talking about a moon that way.
Please, Johnny, don't make fun of it. If it could talk, I know what it would say.
Oh, Ruth.
It'd say, don't go, Johnny. Stay here with the girl who loves you. The girl who needs you.
I wish you wouldn't talk like that, Ruth. It doesn't make my going away any easier.
Johnny, promise me something.
Sure, baby. Anything. You just name it.
Promise me, Johnny, that you'll... Well, that you'll remember our moon. And that every month when it's full, you'll go out somewhere by yourself and think of all the times we've looked at it together.
Oh, that's so silly, honey. Oh, I'd feel like a moonstruck kid just going out to stare up
Please,
at the sky.
Johnny, I'm serious. And when you're looking at the moon, I'll be doing it too. And thinking about us and... Well, it'll make us seem closer together.
All right, Ruth.
You promise?
Sure, darling. That isn't much of a promise for a guy who loves you as much as I do. For the first couple of months after I landed in New York, I remembered that promise to Ruth, and boy was I a sucker for any song about the moon. Moonlight and roses on a hurdy-gurdy. Shine on, harvest moon, coming from a tinny player piano in one of those Broadway shooting galleries. Oh, the moonlight fares the night along the Wabash over the radio. Yep. Didn't matter what the words said. To me, they meant only one thing. Ruth. But when I looked up at the sky for that gentle moon, that lamp of lovers that she used to talk about, well, all I could see was lots of tall buildings stretching up in a glow of bright lights that misted up the whole night sky. No moon. No stars. Almost no sky. So, little by little, the promise slipped farther and farther into the back of my mind, while I walked the soles right off my shoes looking for a big-paying job. The one I finally got was driving a truck along the dock for $32.50 a week. It wasn't long after that I met Tony Marudi. I was standing by my truck waiting for it to be loaded when he came up to me. He had on a gray suit, gray hat, gray suede shoes. Everything matched. He even wore a sneer on his mouth to match his small, sharp face.
Hello, Johnny. You are Johnny Clement, aren't you?
That's right. How do you know?
It's part of my business to know the names of men we're, shall we say, interested in.
I don't know why anybody in New York should be interested in me. Who are you?
Marudi's my name. Tony Marudi.
Yeah? What's on your mind, Mr. Marudi?
Oh, nothing in particular. I just wanted to talk to you. Like your job, Johnny?
What do you think?
I'd venture a guess and say you didn't. Not enough money.
Listen, mister. I don't know your racket, but I don't...
I was only thinking that you might welcome an opportunity to supplement your income. After all, Johnny, you're not really a truck driver. You're a man who should be making real money.
And what do you suggest I do about it?
Well, now, this is no place to talk business, since what I want to say is in strictest confidence.
You're right ahead. There's no one around here listening to you, except me.
All right. Here's my proposition. Occasionally, a ship is unloaded here carrying cargo that my organization requires in its business.
Such as what, for instance?
Well, such as certain fabrics shipped over from England.
Thinking of replenishing your stock of gray tweed suits?
I see what you mean. Pretty good.
And now I see what you mean. And it's not so good. The answer, Mr. Marudi, is no.
But, Johnny...
You heard me. I may need money, but not that kind.
You don't understand. Your job be very simple. All you have to do is drive your truck out of the city to a place where we can meet you.
I said I'm not interested.
Not even for a cut of, say, $2,000?
Not even for 10 times that much. Now get out of here before someone has to carry you.
I thought you were a lot smarter than that, Johnny.
All right. So do you. I'm dumb. Now get going.
All right, Johnny. Don't get sore. Here's a card with an address where you can reach me. You know, just in case.
Weeks went by. Long, hard weeks. Then months. And I was getting no closer to realizing those fancy dreams I'd spouted to Ruth before I left River Junction. After a while, I got so discouraged that it hurt me even to write to her. So I wrote less and less frequently until finally I wasn't writing to her at all. Then one day, a letter came. Ruth's writing was on the envelope, but it wasn't her stationery. And when I opened it, I saw it wasn't even a letter. Mr. and Mrs. Roger Adams request the honor of your presence at the marriage of their daughter Ruth to Mr. Harley Higgins. Marriage of their daughter Ruth? Marriage of their daughter Ruth? Marriage? Ruth?
Come in. Well, Mr. Johnny Clement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me, Mr. Marudi.
Sit down. Cigarette?
No. No, thanks. Well, I guess you know why I'm here.
You've changed your mind.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. I'm ready for that job now.
Good, Johnny. Good. Tell me, what made you change...
That's none of your business, Marudi. I've decided to work for you. That's all you need to know.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Let's forget I ever asked you, okay?
Okay. And I'll do that dock job for the $2,000 you promised me. And any other jobs you got. I don't care whether it's honest or not. Or dangerous. If there's money in it, I'll do it, see? Anything, anytime. You're looking at a new and different Johnny Clement.
You know, Johnny, I had a hunch you'd be coming up to see me one of these days. Here. Let's drink to the new Johnny Clement.
Thanks, just the same, but I don't drink. And never mind your hunches. Just tell me what I have to do.
Sure, Johnny. Here's a setup. A week from tonight, a ship will tie up at your dock.
Yeah?
Part of the cargo will be woolen goods from Scotland and England. High-grade stuff worth plenty of bucks a yard. Especially now with a clothing shortage.
Go on.
Those big export crates will be jammed to the lid with bolts and bolts of the stuff. We want to get them, and with your help, we can.
How?
Well, you've been hauling in and out of the pier for months, so nobody will suspect you of anything. Besides which, you have papers to prove you're the driver for the forwarding company.
Okay, then what?
After the custom guard okays your load, drive out the gate as usual. Then turn left and follow the river for 4 blocks. On the corner by the Esso gas station, a guy in a brown suit will give you the thumb business, you know, like a hitchhiker. You pick him up.
Hey, I thought I was going to handle this job by myself.
Well, now, it's not that we don't trust you, Johnny. We just hate to have you get lost or take a wrong turn.
Okay, okay, so I pick up the hitchhiker. And what?
Then you drive north on Broadway out of town. Along the route, I'll plot on a map for you. About 22 miles out, there's a dirt road leading off to the right. We'll be parked on North Broadway in a black Chrysler sedan just before you get to the road, so you'll know where to turn. As soon as you swing off Broadway, about a couple of hundred feet, switch your lights off, and we'll pull in after you.
To relieve me of the load?
You're catching on fast, Johnny.
And the payoff. When do I get that?
As soon as you deliver the goods. Oh, don't worry, my friend. You'll get everything that's coming to you.
Finally, Friday night came, dark and rainy. They loaded my truck with a lot of heavy cases plastered with custom seals, and I drove away from the pier. Four blocks up at the gas station, I picked up Marudi's stooge and headed the truck out of the city. All that time, Red, that was the stooge's name. Red kept up a string of senseless chatter.
What a cinch this job is. Like taking bananas from a monkey. What, 5 years from now, them boneheads will still be wondering what happened to all that moth food.
Moth food?
Yeah, you know, wool, moth food, you get it? Ah, well. Anyway, I can use this dough. Think maybe I'll take me one of them airplane trips to Paris or somewhere. Hey, what are you going to do with your split? Boy, that's some thunder. Hey, did you hear what I asked you?
Huh?
What's the matter with you, bud? You ain't even listening.
I'm getting paid to drive a truck. I chatter about a lot of things that don't matter to either of us.
Okay, okay, Mac. Don't get sore about it just because you're new to the racket.
My name isn't Mac. Johnny.
Okay, Johnny. Like you guess from my hair, everybody calls me Red. Now, let me tell you this for your own good. When you've been in the rackets as long as I have, you learn it pays to be a little more friendly with the guys you work with.
Now, you've told me for my own good, shut up.
Yeah. Certain people I know are sure getting touchy around here.
I said shut up. When you're riding with me, you do as I tell you, understand?
Yeah, it looks like the thunder shower's blowing over. It's beginning to clear up towards the east there.
Yeah?
Yeah, gonna be a nice night after all. Hey, look.
At what?
The sky, stupid. The moon, you see it? Yeah. Yeah, I see it. A full moon. Gee, sure is pretty.
The sight of that moon hanging in the sky was as big a shock to me as if I'd suddenly seen Ruth sitting on the seat beside me. I couldn't seem to get my eyes off it. It was the first time I'd really seen the moon since the night Ruth and I said goodbye. I started remembering lots of things. But most of all, I remembered what she said the night I left. That every time I looked at the moon, she'd be looking at it too and thinking of me. Suddenly, I wasn't two people any longer. I was only Johnny Clement, the kid from River Junction who was in love with a girl named Ruth.
Hey, what's the matter with you, Johnny?
Huh, what?
Oh, nothing, Red.
You've been looking at that moon like you was hypnotized or something.
Hypnotized? Maybe I am.
Well, just don't forget, you're still behind the steering wheel. I ain't in no mood to dig myself out of a ditch tonight.
I'm all right. Hey, Red. Have you ever thought much about the moon?
Not much about the moon? I don't get you. Say, that car with Marudi and the boy should be along here someplace. You better slow down a little.
Have you ever seen a moon like that, Red? It's so big and so sort of perfect.
Hey, you got a screw loose in your upper story. First you won't talk at all,
it's
and...
It's a gentle moon. The lamp of love.
Hey, look, will you keep your eyes on the road and slow down like I told you?
Our moon, she used to call it. Remember our moon, Johnny?
She's the screwiest talk I ever heard.
I used to make fun of her and tell her she should have been a poet.
Hey, there's the car up there on the right, Johnny.
Now I know what she was talking about.
Hey, Johnny!
And it's still our moon. It'll always be our moon.
Slow down, Johnny. Look where you're going.
As long as that moon is up there shining down like that,
you crazy fool! Watch out! You're running out the road!
Red,
right. I was hypnotized. I couldn't see anything but that moon. I couldn't hear anything but Ruth's voice. I didn't aim my truck at the black Chrysler sedan. I just hit it, that's all. Well, I guess this all sounds kind of crazy to you. But somehow, I feel that that's what the moon was trying to do. It was trying to blind me to everything, so that I'd run off the road into Maruti's car. Yeah, I sure was moon blind. Well, that's the story, Inspector. Probably doesn't make much sense to you.
On the contrary, Johnny, it makes a lot of sense.
I guess it doesn't make much difference anyway. I'm ready to take whatever's coming to me.
I don't think you'll have too much to worry about. When you hit that car and pinned it in the ditch with your truck, we were able to make a clean haul of some men we've been trying to get our hands on for a long time.
Yeah, and me too. I was part of that gang.
I don't think you really were, Johnny, but it'll be up to the judge to decide about that. Right now, the charge against you is reckless driving. Now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, Johnny, I want to step out in the hall and check up on something.
Johnny.
Ruth. What are you doing here?
Oh, Johnny, darling. Johnny.
But, Ruth, I don't understand.
Everything's all right now.
What do you mean, everything's all right?
I mean, I'm never going to leave you again, Johnny. Not if you still want me. You do, don't you?
Oh, Ruth. Of course I do. You're engaged. You're going to marry Harley.
No, Johnny. It's you I'm going to marry.
I'm all mixed up. What about that other wedding?
It's called off, Johnny.
Called off? What happened?
Well, it was last night. There was a full moon.
Yes, I know.
I was waiting for Harley to come for me, and while I was waiting, I went outside to look at the moon.
Yes,
Ruth. And I had the strangest feeling, Johnny. I can't explain it, but for the first time since you left, I thought you were looking at the moon, too.
You must have known, darling.
And I started to walk. Slowly, like we used to, thinking it was the gentle moon, the lamp of lovers. And, well, I guess I forgot how late it was getting.
It was as if you were hypnotized?
Yes, that's it. And when I finally remembered to go back to the house, Harley'd been waiting for over an hour.
Did you tell him what had happened?
Yes, but he wouldn't listen to me. He was furious. Said he couldn't understand how anyone could spend so much time just staring at the moon. And then, oh, we said lots of things to each other, and so here I am, darling.
And you really broke your engagement to Harley?
Mm-hmm. We both decided we'd made a mistake and that it was a good thing it wasn't too late to fix it. Here, let me move your bed over to the window.
Ruth, what are you doing? What's this all about?
There. Now look out. What do you see?
Darling. It's the moon. Our moon.
Yes, darling. The gentle moon. The lamp of lovers.
Heartwarming performance. And I know that you're all anxious to learn the names of the Broadway stars presented by Pillsbury in today's Grand Central Station drama. And I'll tell you in just a moment. But first, ladies, why not be doubly sure of something extra good in baking? Why not use Ann Pillsbury recipes right along with Pillsbury flour? These recipes, which you find in every bag, have been developed especially to bring out all the goodness and flavor in this specially milled Pillsbury flour. The bread and rolls you bake will be light and beautifully textured. Your biscuits will be flaky. Your cakes and pies delicious. Your all-around baking with Pillsbury flour will be the very best that's possible today. So be sure of good baking before you bake. Ask for Pillsbury flour. And now our cast. Today's Grand Central Station drama, Moonblind, was written by Harry Trelevan, Jr., and starred Catherine Bard as Ruth and Donald Buca as Johnny. Red was played by George Matthews, Maruti by James Monks, the nurse by Eugenia Rawls, the inspector by Frank Tweddle, and your narrator was John Reed King. We leave Pillsbury's Grand Central Station until next week at this same time. Listen for the train whistle and hear another complete and original radio drama with a great Broadway cast, starring Alice Frost, who is the better half of radio's Mr. and Mrs. North, and Gary Merrill, now on Broadway in Garson Kanin's smash hit, Born Yesterday. This is Stuart Metz, saying goodbye from Grand Central Station until next week for Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Grand Central Station on Tuned to Yesterday from August 24th, 1946 on CBS. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, Nelson Eddy and Jeanette McDonald, two singing stars of the past, star in the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater. And they're joined by the support of Wilbur Hatch and his orchestra, Hatch being one of the most sought-after arrangers and conductors during radio's yesteryear, not only understanding the format completely, but also creating some famous radio show themes, most notably the theme of the Whistler. This next episode from March 25th, 1946, called Sweethearts.
The Screen Guild Players. Our stars, Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy. Our play, Sweethearts. The Screen Guild Players in Victor Herbert's immortal operetta, Sweetheart, with Hollywood's most beloved singing sweethearts in the roles they made so famous on the screen. Jeanette McDonald as Gwen Marlowe and Nelson Eddy as Ernest Lane. For 6 years, they've been the biggest hit on Broadway. And Felix Lehman, their producer, has grown fat with profits and lean with worry. For 6 years, he has tried to tell himself...
So what? Suppose I haven't got a contract with them. What can Hollywood offer that Broadway can't?
And for 6 years, Norman Trumpet has had the answer.
Hollywood is the natural fulfillment of Broadway. My studio wants them, my studio needs them, and someday my studio's going to get them.
How do Gwen and Ernest feel? Well, mostly tired. 6 years without missing a single performance. 6 years of boisterous, adoring crowds. 6 years of discipline imposed by Kay Jordan, who acts as secretary for both. Tonight, for example, walking in on Gwen...
Oh, no, you don't. Not a single chocolate. You're half a pound overweight right now.
And a few minutes later, in Ernest's room...
Oh, no, you don't either. You put down that pipe until the show is over. Well, yesterday, I heard you cough twice.
6 years of slavery. 6 years of success. 6 years of something that doesn't change. After each performance, a little note is slipped under Gwen's dressing room door. A little note unsigned. There was one tonight.
6 years, it was like 6 minutes. 6 minutes without you are like 6 years.
And one last night?
Whenever anyone asks you what I'm doing, just tell them I'm thinking about you.
And the night before?
All the world's asleep but us. But we are the ones that are dreaming.
After every performance, matinees included. And Gwen has saved every one of them. There's no doubt about it, Gwen's in love. And now she looks up happily at a familiar knock.
Come in.
Good evening, Miss Marlowe. Remember me?
Oh, yes, Mr. Lane. The man in gray, some 6 years ago, wasn't it?
6 years ago tonight. My suit's lasted pretty well, hasn't it?
Beautifully. Mine has too, remember? The something in blue.
Ah, you both get prettier every year.
You'd better come in if you're going to get personal. The hair.
Now, do you mind if I kiss my wife?
I'd love it.
6 years ago tonight, Mrs. Lane.
Yes. Oh, sneaking away after the show opens. Such a funny way to get married.
Very good way. In fact, I'll never get married any other way.
Neither will I. Oh, darling. Darling.
Any changes you'd like made, Mrs. Lane?
Mm-hmm. Quite a big one, Mr. Lane.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. But I don't see enough to tell you about it.
Well, tell me now.
That's what it is. We don't see enough of each other.
We certainly don't. And we're going to fix that. Starting tonight.
Starting tonight. Where are we going?
Well, where do we go every year?
To our own little table at Angela's. And just think of it, we'll be let alone.
Nobody will ask us to sing.
No, and there won't be crowds of moonstruck women climbing all over you for autographs.
And no orchestra playing the hits from Sweetheart.
And we'll be alone.
And we'll be together.
Oh, it'll be so peaceful.
So quiet.
Kitties, I've got the grandest idea in the... where are you going?
Out.
I'm going out, too. Good night, Billy.
But, children, you can't. You can't go out this way. You're supposed to come to the party.
What party?
My party. Just a little table at the Mirabeau.
Sorry, old man. We've got another date.
But thanks for asking us. Good night.
But you can't run out. You've got to come. We've been planning it for weeks, for months.
Not tonight, Felix. I'm putting my foot down.
And I'm putting my foot down, too.
Well, you don't have to put your feet down on my heart.
Oh, Felix, don't talk like that.
Well, I'm sorry. It's just the disappointment. Don't you mind. Just forget about me.
Oh, darling, we could never forget you.
Oh, go ahead. Don't think of us. Just turn your back on the few old friends who wanted to share your happiness.
Now, just a minute. We never turned our back on an old friend in our lives.
And you needn't think we're going to start tonight. Where'd you say that party was?
The, Mirabeau.
Just a few old friends?
Oh, that's all. Just a few old friends, more or less.
Darling, just wait till I get my hands on Felix.
Yeah, me too. Just a few old friends.
There's a couple of hundred I've never even met.
And of course, there just happens to be a broadcast.
Nothing much. Just a little coast to coast hookup.
And all the chorus here from the show, and the press, and the cameraman. I'm going to break his neck.
Too bad you can't do it before he gets to that microphone.
Yeah, I wonder what he'll say as if I didn't know.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, I wish you could be here with us tonight at the Hotel Mirabeau, where we're celebrating the 6th wedding anniversary of Gwen Marlowe and Ernest Lane. And that's all we're doing, of course. This is no publicity stunt. Why, I'm not even going to mention Sweetheart, the show they're starring in at the Melody Theater. We're not here to talk about Sweetheart. About the way Sweetheart has broken all records, playing to capacity every night for 6 years, matinees Wednesday and Saturday. No, we're here tonight just to forget Sweetheart and have a good time.
Gwen, what's that show we're here to forget?
Darling, I've never even heard of Sweetheart.
That's why we're here, to eat and dance and maybe hear a few songs.
Uh-oh, here we go.
That'll be a nice change for us.
Which reminds me, our two stars have asked particularly to sing for you. And since they're so anxious, I'd better not keep them waiting. Oh, yes, here they are. They're coming up to the microphone now. And I believe they're going to sing Pretty as a Picture. Gwen, Ernest, the microphone is yours.
You know what I'd like to do?
What?
I'd like to...
Sing, of course.
You're pretty as a picture. Darling, you're a dream. Who could paint a picture
what you say is clever and unique. 100 million times a day, 1 million others speak the same old line. Oh, breathe for a man with soul so dead, who never ever took her hand, and to his girlfriend said, "You're pretty as a beehive, darling, you're a dream."
Oh, the kind of picture.
I could kill Felix for doing that to us.
Killing's too good for him. We ought to put him through our routine for a year. Radio, publicity stunts, charity dinners.
Yeah, performance every night.
Matinees, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and holidays. Oh, darling, why did we do it?
Dear old Felix.
Well, isn't it time we thought of ourselves? That Mr. Trumpet was at the party tonight, you know, from Hollywood.
I know. He mentioned that his offer's still good.
Wouldn't it be wonderful? He said you don't have to be on the set until noon.
And you're through by 3.
And you have your evenings all to yourself.
And the climate's terrific. It never rains.
Well, practically never. And everyone has his own orange farm.
Yeah. You can go out in the backyard and chop down your own fruit tree.
Ernest, why don't we? Let's tell Trump that we'll sign a contract.
I did. Tonight.
Oh, darling, you're wonderful.
Now all we have to do is break it to Felix.
I did. Tonight.
Darling, you're wonderful. Oh, California, here we come.
Well, the sentiment's right, but the thing's wrong.
Got anything better, Mrs. Lane?
I think so.
I'd like to go to some land far away, while we breathe our beer alone, breathing the sunshine.
I could really go for that.
California?
No, the cricket. Come on, let's cut some more, huh?
While the cricket on the hearth goes tap, tap, tap. While the cricket on the hearth tap.
Well, the unbelievable has happened. Ernest and Glenn are leaving the show, and Felix Lehman's gold mine will soon run dry. Only one more performance to go, and Felix is in gloomy conference with Leo Crump, who happens to be the author of Sweetheart.
Oh, it's no use, Leo. I tried every trick I know. They mean it this time. That's the end of Sweetheart.
It isn't fair. What will become of me?
You probably have to go to work.
You
mean, there's no hope? They've signed a contract?
Oh, they don't have to worry about contracts. They're the greatest team any producer ever had. That's why Hollywood wants them.
Hollywood wants them. As a team, yes. But suppose they were not a team.
Sure, and suppose they couldn't sing.
But what if they were separated?
Well, we might have a chance. How can you separate two people so much in love?
That's the whole idea. I have a play, a great unproduced drama. It cannot be wrong.
What are you talking about?
It is founded on a universal truth. A woman in love can always be made to believe she has a rival. You say these two are so much in love?
Well, what else would you call it? When he slides notes under her door all the time.
Notes? What do they say, these notes?
Ah, how should I know? They're love notes, I guess. Gwen keeps everyone he ever wrote. They're locked up in her dressing room.
In a dressing room? Felix, my friend, your worries are over. The day is saved. It is Leo Kronk who promises this. Marlowe and Lane will not go to Hollywood.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for their final radio appearance in New York, until next week when the Sweetheart's Hour will originate from Hollywood, Gwen Marlowe and Ernest Lane bring you one of their best love duets. And here they are now. The Sweethearts of the Sweetheart Hour sing Every Lover Must Meet His Fate.
Every love must meet his fate, and all my heart there is no love, no love so great.
You run on home. I've got some shopping to do.
All right, but hurry. Isn't it wonderful?
It's a miracle if we ever get off.
Hey! Kay! Kay, hurry. We'll never get all these trunks closed. Never dreamed we had so much to... Kay, where are you?
I had to answer the doorbell. Leo Kronk is here.
Leo.
He says it's important.
Okay, not now. With all I've got to do...
Quinn, my dear, I came right up. I didn't want to keep you waiting.
Oh, that's what I like about you, Leo. You're so thoughtful.
Oh, you'll excuse me. Got a lot of things to do.
Gwen, I have great news for you.
For me?
For you. I've written a play, a magnificent play, and I'm going to read it to you.
Oh, no, Leo. I mean, not now. I've so many things to do. I haven't packed.
Oh, you can go on packing. I read it loud.
Oh, but Leo,
you see,
dear...
you are in your room, and your husband enters, and he says, as you know, my dear, we have been married a long time. And you say, does it seem so long to you?
I'm sorry, excuse
me. And he says that 6 years with you are like 6 minutes. 6 minutes without you are like 6 years.
Well, these shoes are so hard to pass. What did he say?
6 years with you are like 6 minutes. 6 minutes without you are like 6 years. That's charming, isn't it?
Yes, very charming.
Did you make it up yourself?
No, not exactly. And then you say, oh, Cyril, are you really happy with me? And he says...
I'm just curious about that line. It's so sort of special, if you know what I mean.
Oh, it is special. It was a note written by a man very much in love. I just borrowed it.
Really? Who is he, Leo?
Oh, I know only the lady in the case, and I cannot betray her confidence. You see, the man is married.
Oh. Oh, so he's married.
Yes, one of those very sad stories. He's been writing notes like that for years.
You mean the girl showed you other notes from him?
Oh, she has hundreds. She writes one every day. I have several of them in my play. For example, here on page 27. Whenever anyone asks what I am doing, just tell them I'm thinking about you.
Oh.
And here's another, page 81. All the world's asleep but us. The bearded ones who are dreaming.
Oh, please, Leo, please. I can't stand any more. I mean, not now. I've got so much on my mind. That's some other time.
Oh, I understand, my dear. It is a day of confusion. But it is Leo Crank who promises I will dedicate my play to you. Good afternoon.
Oh, Ernest. Oh, Ernest, how could you?
Friday today, Lane and Marlowe are split.
Winslow says they split wider than 12:30, and that Hollywood deal is off, too.
Yeah, Felix is sending sweethearts on tour. Two companies.
One of them in each, and going in different directions. What's it all about?
I guess that's what Lane would like to know. Says his wife won't even talk to him.
Well, it's tough on them, but it's a break for Felix. Boy, will those road companies clean up?
Chicago, Topeka, Duluth, Sioux City, new house records every city we've played. Why, Miss Marlowe, that ought to make you feel mighty good.
Yes, wonderful.
Pittsburgh, Wheeling, Cincinnati, Columbus, standing room only in every town. Mr. Lane, you must be a pretty happy guy.
Yeah, overjoyed.
You know, Gwen, it's rather strange the way you grabbed that copy of Variety every week. You never had time to read it in New York.
Well, I've got more time now. And I'd like to know where, I mean, what other road companies are doing.
Yes. Where is Ernest, sister?
I wasn't reading about Ernest. I was just looking at the... Oh, Leo Kronk's new play opened in New York.
What sort of notice did it get?
It says, this turkey dishes out the nutty idea that any femme in love will believe hubby has another girlfriend. What plot there is concerns how dopey wife is made...
...to believe that husband is playing out of bounds. Minor character steals love letters husband has written and plants them so that wife is convinced spouse is too kind.
Another woman. Wife is screwy enough to fall for this trite, but audience is not, and... Kay, I must have been crazy.
Come again?
The phone, where's that phone? Hello, operator. I went long distance.
Hello, operator. I went long distance.
Oh, it can't be busy, operator. It can't. Try again.
It can't be busy. Keep on trying, will you?
Hello?
Oh, darling, no, I was reading about Leo's play.
Oh, sweetheart.
Oh, they will never fail.
stars Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy will be back at the Camel Screen Guild microphone in just a few moments. And now our evening wouldn't be complete without a word of thanks to our two gracious stars who took time from their Christmas shopping to give us such a delightful half hour.
Well, that's not very much to give, considering how much this program does for the Motion Picture Relief Fund in its country house.
That's right, Jeanette. The fund gets all the proceeds from this show. And that's one reason why we're always happy to appear with the Green Guild Players. Good night, everybody.
Don't forget, Monday night is always a brilliant event in the Green Guild Theater. Hollywood's greatest stars in Hollywood's greatest stories. Next Monday night, our annual treat for every kid in the family from 6 to 60. Walt Disney's charming and hilarious story, Pinocchio, in a delightful radio version starring Fanny Bryce as the one and only Baby Snook, and Hanley Safford, of course, as her daddy. It's a real Christmas joy. Be sure to listen. Sweetheart was directed by Bill Lawrence, adapted by Harry Cronman, with orchestra under the direction of Wilbur Hatch. Was presented through the courtesy of Ella Herbert Bartlett and also Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Cast Timberlake. Jeanette MacDonald is soon to be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production of Three Daring Daughters. Listen to Vaughn Monroe with Colonel Soupnagel and their guests, the Delta Rhythm Boys, every Saturday night over most of these CBS stations. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood saying good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 25th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.